my friend Fazli Farouk, and he's going to be talking about geographic distribution of mold spores associated with health effects.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Omar, for inviting us for this session, and thank you all who are presenting here, who responded to my request on behalf of ISPRS. ISPRS, International Society for Photogrammetry and Remote Sensing, Working Group on Health. We have been privileged to work with Bob and his organization, IMGA, and we are going to have our next symposium in October 13th to 15th in Washington, D.C., and you are welcome to send me an email to get more information about that. I'm going to talk about something today which is not very exciting, mold spores. As a matter of fact, my children are not very happy that I'm working in this on mold spores, but we believe this is very important for health issues, extremely important rather, because in terms of general population, about 20% of world population, somehow they are affected by this mold spore, which is a huge number. And if people who have a compromised immunity system, they become a victim very easily. And in terms of bioaerosols, contribution from mold spores actually much higher than pollen, which we often hear about. But the abundance of these spores are not same everywhere on every day. They vary. And that's the principle we are trying to use here, why they are different in different places. And if we can understand that very well, then probably we can model those based on those parameters without actually having to count those mold spores, which is very expensive and laborious. So this study, we have worked on selected number of spores that have impact on human health. There are more than 1.5 million species. We cannot work on all of those. And about 100 of those impact human being. And fewer are common. So we selected which are very common and which are known to impact human health. And environment, they do impact their growth, their existence, as well as their sporulation and dispersion. So that's why we try to establish a link, what kind of environmental parameters impact their abundance. So we have collected those environmental data, and of course we had to collect this mold spore. We had to trap them. So it's kind of funny that we had to use those traps to collect those samples, and we had to use kind of a different numbers of approaches, and I'm going to share some of the preliminary results today with you. See, these are the most well-known species of mold spores which cause problem for us. For some reason it's cutting off. The top one is Cladiosporium, hay fever, asthma symptoms, and some other allergic issues, Alternaria, another common one, Stachybotrys, which fortunately rare, but unfortunately we found those also in our study area. Our study area is central Mississippi, urban, rural, and semi-urban areas. Then Aspergillus, which produces mycotoxins, causes problem, and finally Penicillium. The bottom are the recommended by a lot of AAs, American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. If they recommend their physicians to test for those two species of Cladiosporium, then one species of Alternaria, then Epicocum, and Helminthosporium, Aspergillus, and Penicillium to test on their patients for the existence of those. However, they often change their priority, but more or less keep the very similar species. And we found all of those in our study area. as you know, they are important to know.
How we currently are aware of this abundance of this moldy spores?
If you are sensitive person to these moldy spores, probably you watch the evening news and see their daily values. And how do they do that? There are very few monitoring stations. As you see, there is not a single one in Mississippi. The nearest one is in New Orleans. I shouldn't say is, probably it doesn't exist anymore. The last time I spoke with a gentleman who is a physician with a hospital, he said he cannot keep it running because of the cost. It needs people with technical expertise who can understand, who can identify and count those under microscope. They need to prepare slides, and they need to do it very fast because it has to be on a daily basis. So that kind of person costs a lot of money. So right now, probably that's closed. So as you see, there are very few, only 46 in the entire America, only 46 monitoring station. And based on that, we hear every day that what's in our neighborhood, and which is obviously not very accurate. And they also give this low, moderate, high, very high kind of ranking, and only three topmost spores, so which are not very useful. Little anecdote, our project was funded several years back by NASA, and the gentleman who was the project manager, he loves doing outdoor skiing and other things. He lives in Slidell here. But he watched before going out for outdoor this estimation, and it never helped him. So he was very disappointed, and he was expecting we could do a little better estimate for him so that he could keep his outdoor activities and know when to get out, when not to. By the way, that's one of the things this project can help, giving this information to people that in this neighborhood, this is the geographic area, that is the abundance of these spores. Physicians also can get benefited. That's why Galen Marshall, who is head of our allergy and immunology program, he believes that physician can actually change the doses. Here is Dr. Khan. He can correct me if I'm wrong. They can also change the doses based on the exposure level. So the medicine, this allergen medicine, doesn't need to be same all the time. So those are the reasons we did this study. Again, that their abundance is known to be significantly controlled by certain environmental conditions. We hear that humidity and temperature help them. But actually, not all spores respond in a similar way. Depending on their species, they actually respond differently. And I'll show you some examples. And if you want to categorize, you can, into two different environmental variables. One is helping to grow their existence. The other one is helping to sporulate and disperse. So there are two kinds of environmental factors. As a matter of fact, their concentration in the air depends on the principles of gravitation, electromagnetism, turbulence, and dispersion. So the biophysical environment is very complex, and that's why the simple statistical analysis cannot give us very useful model to predict these harmful organisms. And these are the different environmental variables we have used. One of the objectives for this topic was to see how publicly available data can be used. So the top two categories are from NASA and NOAA. Those are publicly available data. But we also installed our own meteorological data logger to collect precipitation, air temperature, relative humidity, soil moisture, leaf wetness, and of course, wind direction and speed, because that controls their dispersion. And of course, we had to collect the moldy spore, or we had to trap those. And this is the distribution of those monitoring stations. We have three, 2 are in urban area, and 4 are in the rural areas. And this is the typical setup. We have this solar panel and the backup battery, and this is the weather logger, and this is the weird-looking trap to trap those 4 spores. And this is actually a slide prepared by my friend Bruce, who was in charge of installing those. We actually had to compromise the location. Initially, we had very specific locations we decided to do, but this needs to be taken care and monitored in the rural area. So we had to find people who will agree to install within the vicinity of their house and collect data, bring it to us. And so we had to compromise a little bit about the location. Whoever agreed and who the people whom we know, we used their services to collect this data. And this is very simple. It's a more than 50 years old technology, but still that's the standard, unfortunately. So this is the drum which rotates with a constant speed, and everything comes in through this slit, gets stuck on the tip. And here's an example, this Cladiosporium. Not a very good-looking organisms, and as you see that when it comes, it brings any kind of other particles in the air. So it's very difficult to identify which is your mole spore, which are dart, or anything else. And these guys can cause asthma and other respiratory diseases to be worse. And the another one, Alternaria, they are little larger than the previous one, Cladiosporium. So they mostly get stuck in your nasal area and may cause infection by inspiring your IgE in those areas. This is Tachybotrys, as I showed in probably the second slide, that fortunately they are rare, but unfortunately we have in Mississippi areas. This is this weird-looking spores. They can harm human being very severely. To tie with the environmental variables, we actually developed 2 other measures, the burst and spike, in addition to concentration. The concentration is the number which converted into cubic meter of air per day. And the burst event is when a particular species is more than 50% within the microscopic field, then we consider that as a burst of that particular species. And spike is when that particular species is equal or more than 75th percentile, then we consider that's a spike. So the reason we did that so that we can rank them in terms of their getting out from their original source and creating a problem. Just concentration cannot do that because some have very high concentration, some are low, so we cannot compare those. And I'll show you an example. By the way, this is the general description of winter and warm season. As you see, Mississippi, it doesn't get that cold. So that's why, of course, in the warm season, it is a little bit higher. And winter season is a little bit less. And these are the different monitoring stations. We saw their location, and it varies. This slide, as you see, in winter, Cladiosporium is decreasing, December, January, and February. On the contrary, look at the right side. At the same time, it is rather going up. So that's why I'm saying that not all the spore type respond in a similar fashion to the environmental condition surrounding them. Martha, who was responsible for identifying and counting all those, she noticed that this particular type, Aspergillus penicillium, they're usually very high in the morning, unless there is an event like a storm or rain or anything. So they're very sensitive, and it is even hourly. This is another example of that. This one is the frequency of burst. The top one is during the summertime, the bottom one is during the cold. You see that frequency of burst is just reverse. Here it is Cladiosporium, the higher number. Here it is Aspergillus in winter. So again, depending on the season, not all spores behave similarly. These are the different approaches we used: linear regression, multiple regression, logistic regression, and finally, we didn't find very useful. Finally, David Larry, who is here, he used machine learning because this relationship is definitely not linear, and he found very exciting results. Although we are at the very preliminary stage, but that is something I would like to share with you. This is the linear regression, and we did find some usefulness. This is multiple regression. This is quadratic model. This is for the winter season. And as you see, these numbers are not that encouraging, but depending on the different sites, there are some relationship between the estimated and original one. On the contrary, for warm season, it is much better. So there is a promise that this quadratic model could be an operational tool, particularly when we want to estimate the very high classification, which is more than 30,000 spores per cubic meter. So that's an example. And this is just the result of, now, this is the one which David Larry found out recently, that this actual mold and estimated mold, the RT value is 84. It's very encouraging. And if you look at for the other types, it's 97, 96, and 94. Do not get too excited about these numbers. We need to do a little bit more research. The training data was not that big. And these are the main variables. And I stop here.